and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And isn't it the truth, whether or not we are a Beatle, whether or not we are therapists or celebrities or just average people who are trying to live their lives, we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And sometimes we feel like we are on a never-ending merry-go-round or a roller coaster ride, and not a fun ride. And yet, I think that there still is a lot of reluctance to reach out and ask for help. And one of the primary reasons why I really love to do the Ask Beattie Show every single week here on the Progressive Radio Network is that I'm hoping that there is some little thing every single week that I can say to you that will help motivate you, will help educate you, will help empower you so that you can actually improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships. Because if we're looking at depression as an example, there are 350 million people worldwide who are suffering from depression. Now, what percentage of these people are reaching out for help? That is really an unknown. In the United States, 16 million adults are suffering. That is one in five Americans. And anxiety disorders has actually taken over the number one mental health issue, and I call it a crisis in the United States. And what about substance abuse issues? You know, you're drinking too much, or you're just popping too many pills. You're rationalizing, you know, I'm going to take an extra Ambien, or what about another Valium? And you go to the doctor, and so often in your 10-minute, if you're really lucky, visits, you ask for a pill. Nobody these days is really asking about what is the root of the problem. It's so easy. It's just so easy to get a prescription. And in this country, we are so overly medicated. But what I have found as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I've been practicing now for over 35 years, unless we actually do figure out what are the issues really all about, and that means, yes, going back to our early history very, very frequently, all we're really doing is putting bandages on our issues. And of course, like real bandages, the bandages come off and we are then having to deal with the same infection that we dealt with or didn't deal with so long ago. And what about your relationship? You know, I cite the divorce statistics. In this country, 48% of first marriages end up in divorce. And people hope and they fantasize that maybe their second marriage is going to be better, that it's going to work, that you're going to have a lifelong commitment with your partner. But that number for second marriages is also, it's very dismal. 63% of couples who are marrying for the second time end up in the divorce courts. And what about third marriages? And people are often very, very surprised to hear this statistic. 72% of couples marrying for the third time. So again, it's about trying to figure out what is really going on. And it is so easy to blame other people for our problems, but it takes a very wise person to be able to say, what is my role? What have I done? And what am I continuing to do that is taking my life really off course? And what I have found is that this is not easy to do on your own. And this is why, you know, after going round and round in circles, and you've had these depressing relationships, relationships and you know that you're drinking too much and you're taking too many pills and you just don't know what to do, I'm so hoping that I am able to convince you to reach out and ask for good help. And, you know, you look at the domestic violence statistics as well. I mean, 3 women are killed every single day. 4 women are abused by their so-called intimate partner in their lifetime. So we're struggling. People are struggling today with politics, with jobs, with unemployment, with poverty. There's a lot on our plates. And in fact, there is a recent book that was written by a colleague of mine who I actually had on the show a couple of years ago, Lori Gottlieb. And the book, and I'm halfway through the book, and I really highly, highly recommend it. Maybe you should talk to someone. So it's not just Lori Gottlieb and Bede Cohn Freddos and other therapists around the country who are really saying to you and telling you that in this crazy, crazy, stressful world of ours, that it is a good thing. It is not a weakness to reach out and ask for help. And it really can make all the difference in the world. And so many people, they believe that if you go into therapy, that it is going to last for years and years. For some people, it may. They may need tune-ups on a regular basis. And for others, you know, certainly people in my practice, they come into therapy for very, very specific reasons, typically depression and relationship issues. And the experience with me is it's very, very intense, and it is intensive. But typically, people do very, very well as long as they are actually serious. And that's really the first question that I ask people when they call me. I want to know how committed they really, really are to acknowledging, addressing, and resolving their issues. Because if they are not committed, then these are not the kinds of people that I want to spend my time with. But, you know, most people who do see me, they understand what the experience is going to be about, and they do very, very well. So you don't need to navigate this world on your own. And I so frequently use sports as an analogy. For those of you who've been listening to the Ask Bede Show, in fact, today is the 269th show that I have been doing here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I played competitive sports throughout my entire life. And I was number 10 in Canada as a junior singles tennis player. And recently, and if you've been listening to me, I've been having some problems. I've been having some problems on the court. And I have a wonderful coach, Gary Yee, who's really trying to help me move beyond my issues on the court and my recent lack of self-confidence. And, you know, it's so good. It's so good to be able to talk with somebody, to work with somebody, whether or not we're talking about sports, whether or not we're talking about work, whether or not we're talking about an artistic endeavor, to get a second opinion, to get another perspective. And this morning is an example. I think that his coaching really has finally started to make a difference. I've started to relax. And you too can really find that your life can be a lot better if you do find that you're just going around in circles. And again, reaching out can make all the difference in the world. And again, my weekly tips to remind you that we should all be doing every single day, making sure that we are on a plant-based diet, fruits, vegetables, vegetables, grains, fish, nuts, supplements. And remember that people in Sardinia, they live the longest. And I'm always interested in talking to people and in researching, you know, people who are doing well in this world. They eat healthily, they interact, they socialize, they sleep 8 hours a night, they take naps. So these are things that we should also be taking in our own lives. And of course, the importance of exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation. And of course, having supportive people in our life. In fact, that is the number one thing that Harvard researchers have found that really makes a difference. It's not the money, it's not the bigger, the better, the more, the condos, the planes, but it's really having significant positive relationships in our lives. And of course, that means eliminating toxins of all kinds, chemical toxins, including toxic people that can absolutely make us crazy. Other things that I want to remind you about: positive visualization, dancing, listening to music, aromatherapy, the great feelings that we all experience in helping others and giving back. And a lot of people, certainly a lot of people on the Upper West Side in New York City, we have dogs, and not only are our pets just great company, but what a wonderful, wonderful way to meet people and to socialize. And another thing that, again, I want to remind you about is to really try and minimize the social media and the cell phones and the computers. You know, I woke up this morning and there were so many messages. And what I find, the first thing that I do, I want to delete everything. I don't want to wake up with messages and phone calls and running to the computer. It is not a good way to start your day. A much better way is to sit down either with yourself, and if you're lucky enough to have a really good partner, as I am, my husband Jim, and just look out the windows, enjoy the day, have a lovely conversation before we get so engaged and so involved in all the social media. Because finding a balance, and we're never going to find the perfect balance between work and fun and love and relationships, that's really, really important. And the secret, I believe, to having a really wonderful, wonderful life. And of course, Gary now reminds us every single day about intentional ignorance and intentional neglect. So what that means is that we all need to be a lot more mindful of what we are doing every single day, and to make sure that the things that we are doing, the people that we interact with, the activities that we are involved with and in, are things that are really and truly in our best interest, and that we are not spending our lives and our time in self-destructive and self-sabotaging behaviors. So I hope that you are going to take this all in, as I remind you every single week. And if you do, you will soon start to see a major, major positive difference in your life. And it's really easy to make excuses why we can't do this, and there's no time for all these wonderful positive things that can make a difference. But I'll tell you, my friends, you know, life goes by very, very quickly, and you don't want to have regrets. You don't want to say to yourself, if only I had done, specifically when you actually know the things that you can do and the things that you can avoid to make your life much, much happier. And in the final analysis, all I can do is really encourage you. I can't change you. I can't change your mind, but I can continue to try and encourage you to really live your life and doing things that are truly in your best interest. Well, moving along now, yesterday, after I played a couple of sets of tennis, I was reading the Psychology Today magazine that I get every single month. And there was a really good article. It was a poignant article on infidelity. The article, Sex, Power, was written by Hera Estroff Morano. And anybody who has dealt with infidelity knows that there's absolutely nothing feels worse than being betrayed by someone close to you. In fact, in 2017, infidelity, it is a murky business. Modern technology allows more people to connect than ever before, but this has drawbacks, enabling people to conduct extramarital affairs, both physical and emotional. And recent infidelity statistics suggest that in over one-third of marriages, one or both partners admits to cheating, and women, the female statistics, has actually caught up to men. I mean, years and years ago, when we talked about infidelity, we would be hearing about the man cheating on his wife. Well, now we are hearing more and more and more about how women, too, are engaging in extramarital affairs. And in the article, there were a couple of people who were mentioned who I figured that I really wanted to contact. My guest, and just before I introduce New York divorce attorney Robert Dobrish, who has some very, very unique things to tell us about a new phenomenon that he is seeing in his own practice, I want to play some music that I think tells a very interesting story about what it is like to discover that your husband or wife is having an extramarital affair. And this is a song by Nancy Wilson, Guess Who I Saw Today. Well, my guest today, and thank you so much for coming on the Ask Beattie Show at the last minute, is Robert Dobrish, who is a New York City divorce attorney. So welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you, Beattie. And thank you for playing Nancy Wilson's signature song. Nancy was just coincidentally a very dear personal friend of mine for decades.
Uh-huh.
She just died a couple of months ago.
Oh, my, I didn't realize that. And, you know, when I heard the song, in fact, my husband, Jim, found the song yesterday. I was trying to figure out what I was going to be playing on the show. And it really, I mean, I just sat in the living room and it was very, very painful. And, of course, this is something that you deal with every single day, right?
Well, certainly every single week.
Or every single week.
So infidelity, of course, used to be one of the most important things that one had to deal with in connection with divorces, because some decades ago, if a woman was found to be guilty of infidelity, she would lose her rights to spousal support at a time when we were still a title state, which meant that whoever had the money kept the money, and the only thing that a woman would be able to be entitled to would be support. But she would lose that right if she were guilty of adultery.
Uh-huh.
That went out in the late 1960s, and it wasn't until 1980 that equitable distribution came in, where women were, or the less moneyed spouse, usually the woman back then, was entitled to receive a part of what had been accumulated during the marriage. Now, fault is no longer a factor.
Mm-hmm.
That recently happened in New York, and infidelity does not impact upon the financial terms of a divorce, but it has a great deal to do with the causative factors for divorce, and guilt factors that influence the results.
So let me ask you this. You say that it doesn't affect finances. Does it affect custody and visitation?
Not if the infidelity isn't performed in front of the children, not if someone isn't a serial unfaithful person who introduces children to boyfriends or girlfriends over and over again. If you just have another partner and you are civilized about that, it shouldn't impact upon the custody at all. However, it certainly impacts upon the attitudes of the children, who very often will align themselves with one of the divorcing parents, and as a result of what they perceive to be the other parent's misdeeds, mm-hmm. bringing about the ending of that relationship, and that antipathy felt by the child will very often influence the access arrangements and often custody.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the article, it says that what you and also your friend Norman Weilug have been experiencing is that there is a really new phenomenon. I mean, years and years ago, right, we heard about, you know, men having affairs, men cheating. And now men are very, very frequently having to deal with the reality of their wives going out of the marriage and having extramarital affairs. So this is something new that you're also experiencing as a divorce attorney. Is that right?
Well, there's certainly, with changing times and changing mores come, you know, changing relationships, and women going out into the workforce and social media being a means by which you have the opportunity to make new acquaintances even and not say that you're married. Women now have an avenue to relationships that they never used to have. It used to be that women might have affairs with their golf pros or their tennis pros or personal instructors, physical therapists, but they didn't have the opportunity to go out there and flirt at bars and have afternoon lunches with business associates. That wasn't true decades ago. Mm-hmm. But in the last several decades, with women suddenly coming into the workforce and having a very significant role in that workforce, they now are faced with the same temptations that men were faced with, and weren't able to say no. Women, I think, are stronger than men, personally, and you don't see quite as many women falling prey to flirtations as you do with men. But nevertheless, there's certainly a rise in infidelity among women today, I think.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, we all make choices about how we choose to live our lives. And I think that people can have a lot of temptations. But if a couple is really connected emotionally and psychologically and sexually, we are going to make different kinds of choices, whether or not we are in the workforce, whether or not we have a tennis or a golf pro. And, you know, what what was interesting and painful for me to read in the article was that men who were, you know, were telling you and who were telling Norman Weilaug about, you know, that they had fully participated in their marriage, or they thought that they had, in child rearing, sacrificing even their own careers at times to be stay-at-home dads when their wives out-earned them, but then to discover that their wives were having an affair. And, you know, what I was wondering, too, is do you think that with your clientele that they divorced because of the affair or because of a multitude of other issues that had really never been acknowledged, addressed, or resolved, and that the affair was just really perhaps the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, no matter who is having the affair, that person is going to say that it was complicated.
Of
that
course.
That person is not going to say, I had the affair because I am weak, and I just fell in love with somebody outside the house. They're going to say, I wasn't getting sex in the house. I wasn't being appreciated in the marriage. It wasn't fulfilling. I needed to find something else. It was your fault. And you know, people will always blame the other person for their own inadequacies or their own failures. You're not going to blame yourself. So that's one of the reasons why fault became irrelevant in divorce cases, and irreconcilable differences became the reason to get a divorce in all 50 of our states. New York was the last state that was a fault state. Mm-hmm. And it was just so complicated to assess fault because of the reasons that everybody had for doing things that were made you look like you were at fault.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so complicated that we just said, we being the legislature and the judges, said, we're not going to do it anymore. And they stopped doing it.
What percentage of your clients who actually seek out your expertise with the thoughts of actually going through with the divorce stop and perhaps think about getting some really good counseling? Because the majority of couples that I work with are there because of an extramarital affair. And interestingly, over the past 35 years, there have been very, very few divorces in my own practice, even though the majority of people were there because one or both had gone outside the marriage.
Well, I think that most of the people who come to see me have been in counseling
mm-hmm.
Before they come to see me, and only begin the divorce process, which is very divisive itself. So they only begin the divorce process after they have tried other means. But so far as infidelity is concerned, that's a tough one, because once someone is found to have been cheating, it's very difficult to to put that toothpaste back into the tube. Once that's out. You'll find that there's such distrust in the relationship that it really is like a cancer, and it grows. And I find it very difficult to acknowledge that people, once one has found the other to be unfaithful, that people can get back together again. Maybe in some of the cases, but most not.
That's been your experience, and it's interesting that I've had exactly the opposite kind of experience, because, you know, for me, going outside the marriage, I mean, that is symptomatic of all kinds of other things that are either going on or not going on in the marriage. And I always see it as a real wake-up call. And I have found that if people still have feelings, especially if there's children, especially if they still value family life, if they still can look back at some really positive points in their marriage. And with good counseling, it's I have seen marriages be transformed, and where the couples end up in a much, much better place because there's an authenticity to the relationship that perhaps never was prior to the affair. So again, for me, it is a wake-up call that something very, very wrong was going on between the two of us, that we were disconnected as a couple. And I think that those are the kinds of things that really have to be looked at if people are going to, you know, have any desire at all to try to reconnect and save the marriage. But you're saying that your experience has been different, that once there has been that betrayal, that's it.
Well, remember, they come to me at a different stage from the stage that they come to you at. They go to you because they believe that maybe there's a possibility of saving the marriage. Most of the people come to me after they've already tried counseling and failed, and they come to me because they now are ready to go forward with the actual separation and division. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the process itself is divisive. I very often will tell people who haven't tried counseling, why don't you try counseling first? And might send them to people that are good. And now, if you are as good as you say you are, I should put you down on my list.
We definitely have to meet.
Do you find
too, Robert, that even though the people may have chosen that they are going to go through with divorce, that they are choosing to divorce well? Or are they choosing to end up in the courtroom for years and years where they're going to be bickering about what time they're going to pick the kid up from school?
Well, I don't. A very, very few people begin with that in mind. I don't think that there are some, particularly, I would put that on the men. Certain types of very narcissistic men might, and powerful men might feel as though they can wield their power in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. It's not their usual battlefield. It's my usual battlefield, but not theirs. And they want to exert their force in any way possible. But those men would probably have some difficulty finding a really good lawyer, because the really good lawyers won't buy that. It's not the right way to approach a divorce case. Sometimes you get stuck in that approach. Sometimes things happen and people become very, very angry. Heaven knows no wrath as love to hatred turned.
Right.
So it becomes very bitter, and the lawyer has to win the faith and confidence of the client. And if the client, either the man or the woman, is insisting on showing some strength and letting some blood, then the lawyer is going to have to take part in that. But that doesn't mean that that's the right way to proceed, and it certainly isn't the right way to finish.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried a lot of cases in my career, and I don't think, certainly not in the area of custody, I don't think that that you win when you win. If you win, you just have a loser who is now out there trying to become a winner. And that's not healthy at all. It's not healthy for the children.
I think in your world, as in my world, when we're negotiating differences, is that, you know, the goal, of course, is to have a win-win resolution, if at all possible, so that people can divorce, they can go on with their lives where they're not killing themselves and killing each other and destroying the children in the process, who, of course, are the innocent victims in all of this.
Yeah, that's the better way. And we can, you in your field and I in my field, can try to, can believe that and then try to achieve it. But we only have so much to say about that.
Exactly. Well, listen, I really appreciate your taking the time, and I will definitely give you a call. I definitely do want to meet you. And again, thank you so, so much, Robert Dobrisch,
and we'll
be in touch. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Well, that was New York divorce attorney Robert Dobrisch, who sounds like a real, real mensch. And, you know, the article in Psychology Today, a very, very poignant piece about looking at infidelity. And actually, next week, we're going to continue on the conversation. A psychoanalyst who was also mentioned in the article, Norman Weilog, I spoke with him this morning. And he has a very, very interesting practice where he runs groups for divorced men. And he is reporting, you know, the new cohort of role-reversed husbands are especially hurt and angry. They feel doubly blindsided by having had no clue that their wives were unhappy, and especially by being sexually rejected despite, you know, becoming the men that their wives said that they wanted. Look, I think that whether or not we're talking about affairs or whether or not we're talking about healthy marriage and healthy relationships, there are a lot of things going on in life, in our external worlds, that we have to, we're doing a juggling act all the time with work, with kids, with money concerns. I mean, people these days, I think, are more stressed out than ever before. And for years and years, I've had so many Ask BD shows on radio and television. You know, I keep harping away at the importance of keeping the couple at the top of the list of priorities. It is just so easy to allow ourselves to become disconnected. And I think that when husbands or wives are saying that they are blindsided, I think it's because they were not connected sufficiently enough to be able to see what was really going on. And this is where it's so important when there are issues in our relationships, and we all have problems and issues and things that need to be dealt with in our intimate relationships, the importance of not letting things go, to be able to sit down and say, look, I need a half an hour, or I need an hour with you. There are a number of things that I want to talk with you about, whether or not it's about sex, whether or not it is about money or lifestyle or children or parenting, so that we don't lose sight of one another. Because again, you know, the days go by, the weeks go by, and it's easy to deny and avoid and sublimate and not want to get into dicey situations. But the lines of communication in a marriage and in close intimate relationships, they have to be kept open. Otherwise, we all find ourselves in a lot of trouble, where people will say, I had absolutely no idea how you felt about this or that. Well, people are not mind readers. And, you know, and I suggest to couples all the time that when things come up, even if they're small, minor, little problems about putting away the papers or washing the dishes or keeping a sink clean, silly little things that over time can become really big annoyances and the best possible thing that we can always do is to discuss, to negotiate, to make compromises, and as Robert Dobrish and I were saying, to try to come up with win-win resolutions, whether or not it is sex, whether or not it is about money, whether or not it is about how we are going to be disciplining our children. Because if we don't do this, we become more and more and more disconnected, putting ourselves and putting our relationships absolutely at risk. Because the fact of the matter is, and in the past 35 years, I've seen probably, you know, thousands of couples. And again, most of the couples who contact me are there not to improve their communication or their problem solving skills, although they certainly do need to improve both. It is primarily because one or both have had an extramarital affair. And again, I believe that happy and committed couples don't go outside of their marriage and have extramarital affairs. Yes, there are all kinds of distractions, and we can go to the Ashley Madison site and we can blame technology and the porn sites. But again, we make choices in our lives about how we want to live. What kinds of choices are going to be choices that are going to be in our best interest and in the best interest of our relationships. So again, for couples who may be listening to the show right now, or for individuals who know that your relationship is not in a good place, rather than just turn your back on the problems and avoid and deny getting into any serious discussion, I think tonight would be a really, really good night to sit down with your partner and say, listen, darling, I love you very much. I mean, hopefully you still do love your partner. And there are a number of things that I feel that we need to talk about, because I feel that we are becoming more and more disconnected as a couple. Now, hopefully you are going to have a partner who is going to be willing to do something about this, rather than just give up, rather than just spend more and more hours on the computer or at work. And if you're finding, and people are finding that whatever it is that you're trying is not successful, I really, really suggest that you reach out to somebody who has a lot of expertise in couples counseling. And even if your partner is not interested or is not willing to attend sessions initially, you should go and get some perspective on what would be the best thing that you can do as an individual to hopefully try and encourage and engage your partner to get involved in a couples counseling situation. Because I do believe, I mean, it really takes two to tango. When we start off, we're in love, we're committed, everything is going to be wonderful, we want to have happily ever afters, and then something will happen, and it happens to all of us. And the smart people and the smart couples will deal with the issues as they are presenting themselves. And if you don't know how to deal with the issues on your own, again, this is why there are experts. And it's very, very important, however, if you are looking to find a couples counselor, that you don't just go to the reviews on Google or on the computer, that you really do get some good referrals from people that you trust, because things can really, really get off track, even more off track than they were initially, if you end up in counseling with somebody who simply does not have the professional expertise. But, you know, when we're talking about infidelity. You know, here we have a third of the marriages where one or both partners, you know, admits to cheating. And here's some interesting statistics. 22% of men say that they've cheated on their significant other. 14% of women admit to cheating on their partner. 36% of men and women admit to having an affair with a coworker. So these numbers are very, very depressing. And I think it is an excuse to say that, oh, now because women are out in the workforce more than now than ever before, and of course, we have a lot more opportunity, that in itself will explain, that in itself will explain, you know, why the extramarital statistics are really up when it comes to women going outside of their marriages. But I think, you know, as I was saying to Robert Dobrish, I think that it is the presenting problem. I think that it is a wake-up call when you find that one or both people are even contemplating having extramarital affairs. You know, in this article in Psychology Today, you know, Esther Perel, who's a very, very well-known therapist, was quoted as saying, mostly people cheat to feel alive and expand their sense of self. Desire is a powerful animating force, perhaps the strongest in the human repertoire. Well, again, there are many, many ways to feel alive. And it's very, very easy in our intimate relationships and in our marriages to become bored and to become boring. And this is something that two people really need to decide. What do we do to keep the sizzle in our relationship? What do we do to keep the sizzle in our sex lives? It's easy to sit back and say, well, you know, we've been together for X number of years and things get a little dull and things get a little boring, and that's the way it is with most couples. But it doesn't have to be like that. We make choices every single day about how we start our days, how we end our days, the amount of attention, the amount of communication, the amount of affection, the amount of sex that we are willing to put out in our relationships. So I think that it is not sufficient to say that both men and women are cheating because they can and have more opportunities than ever and they don't necessarily intend to leave their marriages. You know, yes, women and men, they work closely together, they travel together, technology has made marriage and actually all institutions much more porous than ever with seductive channels of connection. But again, we make decisions. Either we are going to nourish and we are going to take care of our relationships as we promise to do. I mean, people get married and they promise for better, for worse. They're going to love, they're going to cherish, they're going to do all kinds of things to keep their marriages and their relationships at the top of their priorities. And it's easy to get off track. It's easy to take the detours, but we are asking for trouble. We are asking for a lot of trouble if we do not commit as individuals and as couples to really placing a very, very major, major priority on our relationships. And a lot of people say is that we're asking too much. We're asking too much from our marriages, and we're asking too much from our relationships. And I have always felt, and I've seen this in my own life and in my own professional life for all of these years, that in order to have a really successful relationship and marriage, that each of us needs to be in a really, really good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, so that we have a responsibility to ourselves and we have a responsibility to our partnership. relationship to make sure that emotionally and physically and sexually that we are doing everything that we need to do for ourselves to keep ourselves in a really, really good place. And are there a lot of demands? Absolutely. Is any of this easy? Absolutely not. But if there is nothing else that you are going to take away from the discussion that I had with Robert Dobrish and some of my own comments, is that if things are going to work out well in your relationship life, there needs to be a commitment. Not just to talk the talk, but really to walk the walk. And if you find that you are going around in circles and that you just can't seem to get on the same page with your partner, that you're arguing, that you're bickering, that you're finding that weeks and months and years are going by and there's no sex in your lives and you're feeling more and more disconnected and lonely, what alternatives do you have? Of course, you can contact a divorce attorney. Or what you can do instead is at least try to see if the two of you together can find a way to reconnect and resolve some of the issues that are really getting in the way of your own life and of your relationship. And as I said to Robert Dobrish, that I've had incredible success in working with couples who are really serious and who are really committed to turning their relationships and their marriages around. And by the way, I want to tell you before the end of the show that I am going to be chairing a really, really interesting panel at the Left Forum this weekend. In fact, my panel, Sex, Sexy, Patriarchy, and Feminism, is going to be on Saturday, June the 29th at 12:30. And my two incredible panelists, Nomi Snyder, who is a co-author with Carol Gilligan of Why Does Patriarchy Exist? And Pearls Daly, who is a burlesque artist and actor. We are going to be tackling the issues of sex, sexy, patriarchy, and feminism, and that is at the Left Forum here in New York City on June the 29th at 12:30 in the afternoon. It's going to be a really interesting panel. So, everybody, it's really amazing how the time has gone today. And there's so many more things that I really want to talk about infidelity. But I'm going to be continuing on this conversation with Norman next week. And he is a psychoanalyst here in New York City. And it'll be very, very curious to hear what he has to say about the groups that he is running for men who really and truly thought that they were doing everything right in their relationships, only to discover that their wives were having extramarital affairs. And in each case, Wylog reports that marital dynamics shifted, which is so interesting, after the partners decided to reverse roles. But it happened so slowly that no one noticed. So that even when we women ask their mates to be stay-at-home dads, high-earning women are cheating because desire can founder or transpose templates of what is manly.